Hello and welcome to Earth Heart Network Radio, the land-to-mouth food farm and garden edition that comes your way every week here. Live on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We were doing Tuesdays, but we've moved it over by one day just to help the scheduling out. Hope you are doing wonderfully well here in this fabulous springtime. We've had a great week of sunny weather. Still getting those freezes, though. This morning, we were below 30. We were in the 20s, in the upper 20s here last night. Little frost everywhere. Hope you're still out there covering things up if you have some tender plants, and don't put the too tender things out yet. Apparently, our last frost date has been moved up by almost a month now. We were looking at early to mid-May, and now it's set this year for April 15th. So I've seen snowstorms even in May here in the mountains of Western North Carolina, but now we're set for April 15th. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that it can't frost right after that, or that it won't. It's just unlikely as it's set this year, but that's only in 9 more days. So just slightly over a week, right there on tax day, right? We've got our special day where we get to cross that freezing line threshold. And who knows how it will go, being in the 20s already right now. We'll see if we make it for that frost date. Looking at the planting calendar, if we plant and are acknowledging biodynamics and the lunar cycles, we've got a great week for doing all kinds of things. We have the propitious time for fruiting plants going on right now, things like strawberries or tomatoes or zucchini, things that you're focusing on getting that fruit out of it, even if it's a vegetable. The tomatoes, of course, you got to protect, keep them protected indoors. But we have a good time for plant development for fruits or seeds. Then we'll be moving into tomorrow into some root crop planting time as of tomorrow evening. So keep an eye on your lunar calendar. It's fun to be able to garden along with that. Sometimes, of course, though, in the dead heat of spring of just getting it all out there and planted, sometimes we combine days and just do it anyway. But liking to look at that lunar calendar and acknowledging it and planting by it, it's an old, old way of doing things and seems to work quite well. So I've been planning on doing that this week and all this year. I have done it for several years and doing it more and more all the time. Well, you know, there are places in the world where progress is happening regarding organic food and getting rid of GMOs and cleaning up our soils and cleaning up our diet. And then there's America, right? We don't seem to be making progress in the correct direction, but going in the other direction, promoting these things. But I'm always very happy when I hear about good progress in places that makes great sense. And I just would like to see more of that here at home in our country, where we have let the various chemical forms of agriculture take over. And we hear it justified all the time in the name of feeding the world and all of that, which it doesn't do. There's a ton more pesticides involved with these crops, and they're very dangerous. And all of the dangers aren't even fully known yet, but we're learning about them more every day. But I am so glad to see one of our latest bright spots of progress on the horizon. Yes, India is now banning GMO seeds to protect the health of citizens. Yes, India banning the GMO seeds. They are banning Monsanto from conducting GMO seed trials on their land, saying the risks to public health and the environment are too high. How do some people know this, and yet we have some people that have their head completely turned around on this and make up things that aren't even true? We've had things that aren't even true being said about, oh, GMOs are great. Oh, yeah, they're safe, no problem. Well, in other parts of the world, they know that they're not, and they are banning them. No thanks. Just say no to GMOs. That's what's happening in India. Bihar's agriculture minister Narendra Kumar Singh confirmed that India's food supply will be protected from GMO companies growing genetically modified corn on Indian land, and assured the public that seeds will be protected from contamination and genetic material drift. Now, we know Dr. Vandana Shiva has been extremely active in this in India to help ban GMO trials and seed production there. This speech from Bihar's agriculture minister was given at the 2014 Seed Festival at the A.N. Sinha Institute of Social Studies. The Seeds Festival featured over 500 different varieties of crop seed. The inaugural event featured agricultural experts from Bihar, Chhattisgarh, and Kerala, who represent a growing movement against genetically modified crops in India. Singh spoke about protecting non-GM seed crops protecting them from this contamination that occurs. Seed, as he says, is the basic unit of input and is the lifeline of agriculture. Attempts are being made by multinational companies to replace our traditional seeds with GM seeds, which would be dangerous for our environment and health. Singh was joined by those with direct field experience, including Farmers Commission Chairman C.P. Sinha, Harit Swaraj, convener, Vijay Pratap, Jacob Nilathan, an expert from the Asha Alliance, and Seed Savers. Singh announced that Bihar was the first state in the world to halt field tests of genetically modified seed for the larger humanitarian interests of farmers and society at large. And you know, they just might have a chance of having a food supply that doesn't have a dead end attached to it. Great to see this, the lifeline of the basic unit of input, seeds, being protected in India. Farmers seeking seed, sovereignty, and diversity. There, it's all about seed sovereignty. Saroj is a leader of Pashim Odisha Krushak Sangathan, stated seed sovereignty is not a baseless ideological position, but a very pragmatic approach. It's an integral part of food security and sovereignty of a community or a nation. Seed being handed over to multinational corporations, many of them notorious for monopolistic tendencies and operations, is disastrous for the livelihood of millions, he said. Saroj believes in sustainable, holistic agriculture and the right of all farmers to be sovereign and independent, uncontrolled by monolithic seed imperialists, as he calls them. And you know, you think about it, and how dangerous is that, right? How dangerous is that to limit our food supply to untested, hacked, genetically modified crops? If nature doesn't make it, why should we be making it? You know, we like to think we've got it going on, but when nature's been doing what it does for millions of years and things are disease-resistant naturally, things have evolved to be sturdy and hardy and deal with their environment, What a perilous fall that would be to have just nothing but poison food out there. The GMO foods are, by their very nature, toxic to our system because nature didn't make them. They cause all kinds of responses in the body, of the body saying, no, this is not good food. So great to see this effort away from monopolies of seeds and monolithic seed companies, but farmers. Farmers coming together, about 400 other farmers traveled from Andhra Pradesh, Madhya Pradesh, Uttar Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, Assam, Jharkhand, and Karnataka to formulate a plan for protecting their liberty going forward while preserving traditional seed varieties in the country. Saroj believes that the Indian state government should help protect indigenous seeds from being overrun by corporations who contaminate and control agricultural production. As he says, governments should encourage and invest in farmer-level seed production of locally suitable diverse seeds. Community seed banks should be set up with schematic government investment. He also added the group believes that seed breeding should be in organic conditions only because they do not want seeds to become a package that brings in other unwanted inputs like chemicals. So setting new standards, growing more seeds, getting it out there and being able to create a new infrastructure for seeds and needing to look at how we can map a future where we actually have uncontaminated seeds that are safe and have long-term track records, sometimes even thousands of years long track records that are, you know, making it a stronger plant, a more resilient plant for more resilient living. And those plants don't contaminate other plants and mix in dangerous genetics. So protecting our heirlooms is so important. And, you know, stepping up against a company, honestly, a company that needs to do something else to be in business because killing life all over the place in the soil and poisoning us in the process is not a great business to be in. It's time to shift gears, Monsanto. It's time to do something different and not dig in deeper and keep insisting on poisoning everything. We've got to get our life thriving again in the soil. Millions and millions of acres are being destroyed, basically, by allowing all this chemical input. We don't need it. It doesn't help long term. All it does is very, very disease-oriented monoculture, monocropping. So it's a big time. Monsanto's already lost a lot of market share over the last several years. Tons of people waking up. It's being banned around the world in more and more places. Of course, France has taken off Roundup off of the shelves there. They are acknowledging the fact that the World Health Organization declared it as a likely carcinogen to humans. For the last 40 years it's been used, we've ramped up more and more exposure around the world, and it's time to change things. And it's great to see people coming together. They are doing it. They're actually marching against Monsanto. There's people, thousands of people around the world coming together, and they're going to do it again, May 21st, happening all over the world. March against Monsanto, it is going to be happening, as we have another great thing we had just shared from the fall there. Poland became the 14th European nation to officially ban GMOs as well. That was back in September. Poland says no. In the continuing trend of GMO bans sweeping across Europe, the nation of Poland officially announced its decision to join 13 other nations that were excluding Monsanto's controversial crops from their farmland. They say no to GMOs. We will opt out of growing GMOs with a specific focus on Monsanto's genetically modified corn, which many countries fear will contaminate its natural crops if allowed to grow within their borders. And it does. It's been proven to contaminate all kinds of things. And then the crops that we spray gobs and gobs of poison on and act like that's a good thing because we just want that for some reason. Why? I don't know, right? As Jane Goodall said, why could we ever think it was a good idea to grow our food with poison? Of course, that's not a good idea. Get a hold of our reasoning, right? We've get bamboozled for so long, we stop having common sense. But of course, that's not a good idea. And it does. They do contaminate. And they require more chemical pesticides. And then that's even more devastating for our health. So it makes a lot of sense to ban GMOs and have good, long track record heirloom organic plants growing. There's big opposition to genetically engineered foods that has been growing steadily in Europe for decades. And it has resulted in mass protests, including widespread participation in the previous incarnations of the March Against Monsanto movement. They're planning for it again, May 21st, all over the place. It is going to be people getting out there, stepping up for safe, good organic food. And of course, this summer we'll have Organic Fest as we move on toward fall, and lots of ways to celebrate great food. We've got farmers markets opening up all over the country, all over the area here in the mountains as well. And if you're in a warm enough climate, perhaps they're opening in your neighborhood. Somewhere where it's a little colder, they might not quite be opened up yet, but it's definitely time right around the corner. And we've seen just this last week the North Asheville Farmers Market opening up, and love seeing all of the different things that you can learn about there, what's hitting the market, what is out there that is fun and exciting, new things that are growing. Sometimes a farmer has a whole new crop that he's got special out there, and it can be really wonderful to be able to make friends with a new farmer. Maybe you haven't met your local farmer yet. Maybe you've moved to a new neighborhood and you've got to get out there and find out who grows what and when and where they sell it at. And you get a chance, actually, to meet a lot of farmers this June here in the mountains. As I mentioned last week, Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project is moving their farm tour back to June, as they had done it years before. It is going to be the same great tour. It's just going to be there June 25th and 26th from noon to 5 on both days. You've got to get out there to get as many farms in as you can, because sometimes it could be a little tight on the schedule, but you've got 2 days to explore and get out there. And even if you don't have a wonderful local farm tour like we do, get in the vehicle with the family, pack a picnic, and go make your own little farm tour. Call ahead, maybe make some appointments, and go to farmers markets and get out there and meet farmers. Meet those local farmers. Get that behind-the-scenes peek into how your food is grown. So very glad to be seeing that coming up June 25th and 26th here in the mountains. This is the farm tour that we know and love here in Western North Carolina. And you can also go to asapconnections.org and find out more about all the great events and things going on with Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project, local food, strong farms, healthy communities. So make those farmer connections strong again, reinvigorate them, maybe make them for the first time if you haven't made a habit of knowing your local farmers. But it's very important, and you get the real information of what is going on out there and how you can maybe learn about something like, oh, I don't have this particular crop, but I know this other farmer that does. And next thing you know, you are in the local food scene, eating fresher, healthier food than ever, and feeling better too. And then having wonderful, good social connections, because meeting those farmers is really wonderful. Now, I am also happy to report to you another fantastic bright spot on the horizon. Maryland, the state of Maryland here in the United States, has become the first state to ban the bee-killing pesticides for consumer use. So no, if you're out there in Maryland, you will not be able to go buy neonicotinoid pesticides that kill our bees and our pollinators. You will have to forego that and do something else because they're too important. The Pollinator Protection Act needs to be passed this year. We've got that in the works. It needs to be engaged. We actually have a whole plan for taking care of our pollinators, but we've got to get the plan in action. I mean, I read the plan to you last year, and part of it includes modifying mowing schedules. And, you know, if there's a bunch of beautiful milkweed growing, you don't come through and mow it before it can set seed, because that's what the monarchs need. Or if there's a certain flower that all the bees are on, you don't come through and just kill all those bees and mow those flowers down. Altering those mowing schedules, having things be more consciously done, being more aware, stop being a mowaholic, letting those bees eat from those flowers that are out there, waiting till after the last frost date to get into some of the major mowing, and be able to just hold back and make some room for wildlife in our yards and in our homes and in our land. Let's make more room for farmscaping and little nature sanctuaries where we can allow flowers to thrive and beauty to grow in magnificent splendor and support the biodiversity in our world. Step up for nature. Be smart. Don't use those pesticides, right? Look at our farmscaping video on livingwebfarms.org. Look at how to manage different insect pressures with a variety of different insects that can predate on each other, that eat each other. Get the balancing other insect in there to gobble up the one you don't want. Have a balanced, diversified, synergistic ecosystem. And we do it by being part of it. Do it and tag yourself. Hashtag be safe, right? Don't be using those pesticides. Do things to help bees. Tag yourself. Hashtag be safe, BEE, safe. It's great, but hats off to Maryland. Doing a great job. In an effort to curb its plummeting honeybee population, Maryland is about to become the first state in the nation passing strict restrictions on neonicotinoids for consumer use. Now, if we can just get the commercial use banned as well, not only in Maryland, but across the country, then maybe our bees stand a chance. I'm really not into these bogus plans of, oh, guess what? Hey, we've got this poison. We're going to kill the pollinators, and that's the only way we really get most of our food supply. But guess what we've got? We've got another bogus genetically modified product to sell you. Oh, we're going to replace the honeybees with genetically modified ants. You know what? That's not a plan that I want to be relying on for life on Earth for food supply. Really? We're going to have genetically modified ants and we're going to plan on colony collapse disorder continuing because we want to sell another poisonous thing that doesn't belong in nature? Stop. You know, where's the stop sign on this road of destruction? We've got to put up a stop sign in the end of the road there. We've got to stop. So, no, I don't want your genetically modified insects, and it's not a plan that would really work anyway. We have so many weird variables in there, I don't even want to comprehend it. You can't even really sit there and be reasonable and even propose such a plan. Let's get the neonicotinoids out of the market. Get in another business, neonicotinoid producers. Really, is it really worth our food supply and all the pollinators? Of course not. No company is more important than life on Earth. And besides, you can't live and have a great company if there's not life on Earth functioning anyway in a way that is healthy. So, fantastic news. about the limitation of neonicotinoids for consumers. I'd like to see it vastly expanded, like in France. They're getting it out of the stores. Let's get it out of those sprayers that are heading out there over millions of acres and poisoning tons of our pollinators. We just had a very sad announcement last week of over 37 million bees in Ontario, Canada. Over 600 hives lost by a beekeeper there right after a genetically modified crop was planted. If we can't start connecting the dots, what is nature going to be having to do? What? Hit us over the head to wake us up. Let's wake up and make the smart choices now. It's an economically viable decision to be smart. It's an economically viable position to be reasonable, to respect nature, to protect our pollinators. And thank you, Maryland, for the steps you're taking now. Neonicotinoids, as we've mentioned, are a potent class of pesticides used on many crops in the United States that have been linked directly to the widespread decline of pollinator species. And that is our biodiversity that we need. As EcoWatch mentioned previously, 29 independent scientists conducted a global review of 1,121 independent studies and found overwhelming evidence of pesticide linked to bee declines. So that argument is over. We know what happens. And now we have to take the proper steps to protect our pollinators. Because the pollinators get everything going. They're moving all that plant material out there around, all those genetics on their little feet, and they're helping to create fruiting sets on all our fruiting plants and things. The bees are working. They are working out there doing a fantastic job. Let's support that. So the conversation has been had. The independent studies have been done. They've all been sifted through, and we can see the link. Neonicotinoids equal death for pollinators and wreck their immune system and weaken them, make them inclined to have more diseases, and it just messes up the harmony in the web of life. It's not our job to mess up nature. It's our job to be stewards of this wonderful planet that we share. The incredible beauty, the absolutely magnificent layers of intelligence embedded in life when we just have the heart and the eyes to see it is awe-inspiring. Republican Governor Larry Hogan is poised to sign a combined set of bills passed in both the state's upper and lower chambers, as reported by the Washington Post. According to the Post, the bipartisan legislation in Maryland will take away neonicotinoids from everyday consumers who spray their home and gardens with trees with these harmful pesticides. And oftentimes people do it right when there's flowers everywhere, right when there's all these bees, and then boom, they're all dead. So we've seen this over and over and over to the tune of 30, 40, 50, 60 million bees at a time. These are not losses that are sustainable whatsoever. So it's very important that we get these products off the market. It's really not a question anymore. So in Maryland, at least, consumers will not be able to buy the neonicotinoid products such as Knockout Ready to Use. Now, I'm going to name these products. And we don't have a ban here in North Carolina. And maybe we don't have a ban wherever you might be. But I want you to make a note of these and tell people not to buy them. And if you are at the store and you see someone buying them, have the willingness and the courage to say, oh, I just want to let you know. That will also kill our pollinators and our bees. I tell people things, even in the middle of a buying decision in a store. You know, I'm one of those people. If you think it's annoying, I don't want to be annoying, but I don't mind being annoying sometimes because it's people's safety. Now, every once in a while, I just go, oh, whatever, let them eat the poison thing or whatever. And I just have to give up because so many unconscious people out there, it's tiring or it just seems too much to tell everybody everything, right? Of course. So that's why I had the show. I compressed telling everybody everything in a really brief little hour here. And then it can be replicated without me having to repeat myself a million times. But be willing to have the courage to go over there. Maybe even just take an extra stroll down the pesticide aisle just so that you can do this. Here's the products that have neonicotinoids that are probably on sale at your local Home Depot or Lowe's or hardware store. Knockout, Ready to Use, Grub Killer, Ortho Bug Be Gone, All-in-One, Rose and Flower Care, Lesco Bandit Insecticide. From the thousands of hardware stores, we have all these products lined up over there garden centers, nurseries, you know, your Ace Hardwares, your little extra places where they're selling this stuff, those are all neonicotinoids. So I'm going to tell you one more time. Knockout Ready to Use, no thank you. Grub Killer, no thank you. Ortho Bug Be Gone, no thank you to neonicotinoids. All-in-One Rose and Flower Care, no thank you. Let's Go Bandit Insecticide, no. Okay, and but by the way, read the labels and see what you've got going on in there. Maybe there's something else in there that you don't want. In general, I don't use poisons in the garden. I don't need them. And I don't want to be in a poisoned garden. And I don't want to eat food from a poisoned farm with poisoned workers. You know, they have a lot of health problems because they work around this stuff. So great to see this. Thanks, Maryland. Awesome job. Let's expand on what Maryland is doing and do this in our communities everywhere and get it on a bigger commercialized industrial scale that we can get rid of this stuff. Not just consumers. That is not the main use of it. It is the commercial level where it's being used that is the most dangerous. When 37 million bees are dying at once because a huge genetically modified crop was planted, that's what we need to be getting rid of as well as the consumer use of it. So nurseries, all these great places, I'm very careful. More than 50% of the big box stores have plants that are raised with neonicotinoids. That means if you take that plant and you think it's beautiful and you're going to go plant it because you love the bees and the butterflies, you might be killing them. Because more than half of all the plants grown in the big box stores such as Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart, over 51% contain neonicotinoids. And they have some labels, but they're not all labeled. So I'm seeding more flowers, shopping at nurseries and places if I want to buy flowers. And yes, I have a thing. I love buying flowers and getting flowers planted to make sure they're not having neonicotinoids applied on them because I don't want to be killing my bees and my butterflies. I absolutely want to be helping them. That's why I have my garden. I was so thrilled to be able to have my flowering brassicas out there and some of the flowering lettuces that were some of the first food. The bees were there when it first started to warm up. The bees were just all over my wild mustard flowers and all the little flowers I had out there. I was one of the few places that had flowers early in my garden. And why did I have that? I had it because I didn't eat those things out of my garden. I let them go to seed just so that I could feed the bees. And that's what I do all the time. I've got a bunch of rutabagas about to go to seed out there and I'm fine with that. Maybe you'll taste some rutabaga flowers and maybe those will be good too. I love arugula flowers. They're quite delicious. There's all kinds of edible flowers out there. You can enjoy delicious edible flowers. Some people don't even realize and they're sitting there looking, they're looking at edible flowers and they don't even know they can eat them. And they're just not even realizing, hey, I could be nibbling on that. That might be a really delicious thing to put in my salad tonight. But people don't realize it. There are tons of great edible flowers out there. Of course, dandelions are edible. Eat them up before they turn into puffballs for wishing, right? What are some other edible wildflowers of spring? Of course, violets are quite good. Did you know the redbud flowers? Foraging edible wildflowers is really fun. And it's really one of the more fun aspects of eating wild food. It's a great introduction, especially for kids, to foraging. Flowers are much easier to see than wild greens. Greens tend to blend in quite well. So foraging them can be a simple task. Some are sweet, some are spicy, and some almost tasteless. But wild edible flowers are wonderful for adding color and some living food right there. And they're fun to pick. So the redbud, it's one of those trees you rarely notice right until spring blossoms. And then there you have it everywhere. Gorgeous pink reddish buds and the purpley pink, just beautiful. They are all over the place. They're in the woods, along the roadside. Purple pink flowers, some of the first to appear in early spring. They emerge before the leaves of the redbud and nearly cover the tree in an easy to spot showy display of spring color. Redbud flowers taste almost as good as they look. The buds aren't quite as tasty, but the fully opened flowers are usually tart and slightly sweet. Get them early while they're tender. Then we've got the violet, of course. It's great for your mucilaginous linings of your body, the beautiful purple flowers. They also come in a purple and white. They're very common on lawns, and they're quite an interesting plant. They're so prolific, it's easy to gather a bunch of flowers quickly. In Europe, violet flowers have a long history of culinary use that includes violet flower tea, candied violets, and chocolate flavored with violets. Our common violet in America can be used similarly, but it's not as sweet tasting or smelling as the European sweet violet that is usually associated with violet confections. Might be good to get some of that European sweet violet, right? It takes over and it grows so well here, maybe that would work. That might be an interesting thing to try, to get the European sweet violet. I'm going to make a note of that. I like trying new and interesting seed varieties. You know, something you've never had before. And if violets are so easy to spread here, that maybe getting and investing in some of the European sweet violet would provide quite a bit of delicious edible flowers in the spring. So I'm writing that one down. I'm going to see if I can find some seeds. They do seed prolifically. They also set seed even underground. They set seed on little mini seed things that don't even come above the surface. They're quite an interesting plant. Another one that grows everywhere, quite in abundance, that you can nibble on is clover. Yes, clover flowers are quite edible. Another common lawn weed that we take for granted, clover flowers are a bit sweet and make a great tea. White clover is preferable to red clover, though both are edible. Make sure to pick flowers that are free of wilted brown petals. You can eat the entire clover flower, but the petals alone are the sweetest. Clover does have a few little hints that go with it. Consume only fresh or dried flowers, never fermented. Clovers grown in warmer tropical regions contain small amounts of cyanide, so warm tropical clover should not be eaten. Sorry, I'm having a little cough here today. I don't know why. Okay, so you've got to look for avoiding them if you're in a tropical hot region, because those are not good clovers to eat. Some people are allergic to clover, so it's best to start with very small quantities, unless you know you do not have the allergy. Then we have the verdant and beautiful with the diminutive little flower, chickweed. I have a ton of this in my garden right now. And the other day I had a guest and they said, oh, I was looking for some nice greens for a salad. Do you know where I can get some nice greens? Well, he was from a city and was not aware of edible forageable greens this time of year, and there are huge abundance of them. And so I told him, you know, I will go pick you some chickweed right now, right here in the garden. There's a ton of it, and I'll show you it. He said, oh, really? That's wonderful. I love being able to have fresh flowers. Then he picked some violets. I showed him the violets and dandelions. Next thing you know, a wonderful salad was ready to eat. Chickweed flowers are very tiny white flowers. You'll see the chickweed growing lush and abundantly. It's got long stalky stems there with the leaves in intervals. It is a really prolific cool weather garden weed, but its flowers are so tiny that gathering the flowers would be labor intensive. So just use those as a garnish, but get up with the greens. They're not even mentioning, we've just got this mention of the flowers right now. So the flowers are a little small for to gather just chickweed flowers because they're itty bitty. But you can take the whole mess of chickweed there. You can pick a whole bunch of it, chop it up, make something. We had chickweed pakoras the other day in our food workshop we were doing. We had chickweed chopped up and fried that up, made some pakoras in there with a nice dipping sauce, and you can make all kinds of things with these greens and these flowers, not just fresh salads, but there are an abundance of greens out there too, as well as wood sorrel. Wood sorrel flowers are also somewhat small, but they are deliciously sour, and they're a delicious little trail nibble in salads on various foods and other foods you might combine with lemon. The wood sorrel is very kind of zingy there with a little tartness to it. The flowers can be yellow, pink, or white. And if you look for the wood sorrel, they look like a version of clover. You know, when I was little, I had this thing. I didn't even know what wood sorrel was, but I used to always want to eat the wood sorrel little seed pods before they were ripe. They taste like little miniature pickles to me. And I was always amazed at the little pickle flavor that those little seed pods of the wood sorrel have before they go get completely ripe. They've got a really yummy little pickle flavor as well. Another delicious edible flower blooming and coming up here is black locust. You might not think of it, but yes, the beautiful white cascade of the black locust tree. Sometimes you can miss it in bloom. The flowers come in late spring. They'll be coming out in May and early June, but when they're here, it's a great legume, and the flower's flavor is very pea-like, so it's another good one for thinking about stir-fries or combination with other vegetables. And, of course, the ever-famous dandelion that we mentioned and those fresh greens that go along with it early in spring before they get too bitter. And, you know, you can even eat wisteria blossoms. I didn't even realize this. To me, they look like giant bluebonnets. They relate to that, but wisteria blossoms. And, you know, they are extremely prolific. They take over all over the place. So you can eat those as well. Now, avoid picking them near busy roads since the plants do absorb some of the toxins from exhaust and so forth. But they are edible, raw or cooked, and on just the flowers, not any of the other parts. And, of course, we still have our forsythia blooming out there, all the yellow bells, the beautiful yellow flower blooming everywhere. It is so common now that it deserves a mention because it's so abundant. And you can nibble on those, too. Now we are joined by Patrick Battle for This Week in the Garden. And last year, Pat, we had talked about some of the medicinal properties of the forsythia. And I'm not recalling that now. And I was wondering if you might be able to refresh us on that.
Unfortunately, I can't. It was just one that I had just picked up at the moment, and I haven't pursued it.
Oh,
it is
okay.
Medicinal. It's definitely used in Chinese medicine. I'm assuming it's an antiviral because I was so excited about antivirals.
Right. You were reading that book and stuff. Yeah. But I just mentioned it to someone, and then they asked me what was good for it, and then I couldn't remember, and I need to go back and find that. But we'll dig that up.
Yeah, I've got the book, but it's not right at the fingertips. So I'll check it out for you for next week, you know?
Okay, well, we've had a big, long run of sunny days, but we've still got the freezes. We were in the low to upper to mid-20s here this morning, but we're heading toward that last frost day, right, which now has been moved to April 15th. It's moved up quite a bit.
That's a fantasy.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, good luck. Anybody that counts on that is, yeah. Could we possibly be frost-free from the 15th on? Yes. I would not put my prized last batch of heirloom tomato plants, can't get any more seed out, you know, because I wouldn't count on it at all. Frankly, my experience is May 15th is not a guarantee. It's the average frost-free date.
That's what I was thinking. I thought, how could they move it up by an entire month?
I think they're thinking about places other than here in the very, you know, changeable mountains, you know. I mean, we have all kinds of variations. We got the different heights and stuff like that, and yeah, I don't see it. You know, I don't see it at all. I mean, they're predicting 26 for here on Friday night, which is the 8th. And you're going to tell me a week later we might be frost free. I don't think so.
Right.
I don't know what's going on, but boy, I sure wouldn't trust that one. You know?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty radical shift, especially here in the mountains. I've seen snowstorms in May.
Yeah. I mean, we are slowly getting warmer. I have no doubt about that. I still wouldn't put my peppers and eggplants out till the end of the third week of the month of May, you know, and I've used that as a precaution and still been rudely surprised twice in the last 20 years, you know, but it's generally a safe bet by them, you know, and that's not because I'm afraid they might freeze. It's because they don't like to get well below 50, but the two times I was surprised, there was actually a frost after the end of the third week in May, you know.
Wow.
It can happen. You know, it's not at all common, but, you know, it is average frost-free time, you know. So I just got asked last night by someone who it matters that their corn come in early and said, can I plant corn now? Yeah, sure you can, as long as you're using corn that is not, you know, like Silver Queen. Silver Queen really rots in the soil if the soil temperature isn't above 60, you know, which I'm sure it isn't yet. But on the other hand, there are corns that, you know, will come on fast and that can take that cold weather. And, you know, they might get frosted, but the thing is that there's still enough energy that they'll regrow and come up again, you know. Now, if we get real unlucky, the time I'm thinking of is that I can mention was, and it wasn't at the end of the third week of May. It was right smack in the middle of the third week in May. It was actually Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 2003, pretty sure it was 24th, 25th, and 26th. Of May, we had a freeze throughout the entire mountain region. In the Burnsville area where my permanent home is, it was in the mid 20s all those nights but it froze all over the mountains. Now, there were some spots where it didn't, probably where it just stayed right above freezing, you know, some thermals and stuff, but the great bulk of the places, it froze. And indeed, it froze often enough and hard enough that people lost their potatoes. I mean, the classic thing is to plant your potatoes on the 17th of March, St. Paddy's Day. Potatoes are not freeze-proof. I mean, people have to hill them up to protect them from the late frost, and they usually do, and it's a good policy around here because the potatoes come in before the late blight shows up, you know, so it makes sense. That year, the potatoes are way too big to hill up, and I put my potatoes in late. I put my potatoes in on the 25th of May, and I went out and bought the last two bags of potatoes I could locally find, and right after that, everybody around me was scrambling trying to find potatoes. There were no more potatoes left to buy, and nobody had any potatoes. I was one of the only farmers in the mountains that had potatoes because I put them in, not intentionally, but because I was running behind. I got them in late. They were below the ground when that big freeze happened, you know. So it can be that severe. It can be cold enough in the mountains, you know, around the 25th of May that, you know, people are losing tomatoes. You know, I mean, not tomatoes, potatoes, you know. And that's pretty severe.
Yeah, that is. And you just have to play it by ear. And of course, as you mentioned, the microclimates in the mountains are extreme. Everywhere from sea low over down to Mills River, and then you've got, you know, higher elevations, and it's such a different gamble, or the low valleys where the cold settles. And I'm in a river valley, and you can feel that cold in the bottom of the valley. You know, it's really knowing your microclimate and prevailing winds and things like that, and having those air sheds going. But It's a tremendously diverse microclimates here. You know, like where I grew up, it was just all hotter and maybe a hurricane. But here, it could be a variety of different settings. And, of course, you've got Dry Ridge up there. Such a different huge swing in weather can be happening within this few hours of an area.
Well, and indeed, you talked about the river being cold. We stayed a couple of times at the Sunnybank Bed and Breakfast in, I think it's Marshall. No, it's Hot Springs. And you know, it's by the river, so you think it'd be colder. Well, the first time we stayed there, we noticed there were pecans on the ground. We're picking pecans up off the ground. They had a river pecan growing right next to their building. And then we went for a walk. It was spring. Pecans had been there all winter. And we went for a walk, and the wildflowers were way ahead of ours, and that was right next to the river. They are in a warm place because the river is so big there that it holds the heat, and that body of water makes it warmer. So you just, you know, there is no easy way to say what your particular climate's going to be. You just have to watch it and learn it, you know?
Yeah, and I've often wondered about that, about the hot springs, you know, if that affected it as well. But yeah, yes, Pat.
Yeah, I don't know if the hot springs have any impact at all. Maybe, but it's warmer there, that's for sure. Significantly, I mean, you know, way warmer than sea low as far as where the spring ephemerals were at, you know? I mean, they were just starting to begin to make buds in sea low, and they were open in hot springs. I mean, that's several weeks apart, you know? But I was just going to say, yes, people really should pay attention this week. As I said, it's predicted now for Mills River to be at 26. That was the prediction for sea low on Sunday. And I just said to Diane, watch it go lower. And that, you know, this is just, you know, not science at all. Just my experience is when cold fronts are coming in, they tell us it's going to be cold. Very often, as we get closer to the actual time, they say, oh, it's going to be even colder than we thought, you know? And so you really want your radar up. If you've planted stuff out that wasn't well hardened off, you want to cover it very well for this coming weekend. You know, it's going to be quite cold. And indeed, we had a frost here also last night. It was 29 here at my house. My house is at least 100 feet above the garden, which means probably 28, probably maybe even 27 in the garden, you know? So they're saying 26 in the garden at Mills River, Mr. Ed, probably going to be more like 24. You know, that's seriously cold for a lot of spring plants. You really want to put some protection out. So I'd say, remember, my advice always to get that protection out on a nice, calm day, you know, and just leave it rolled up on the north or west side, the windward sides, rolled up with a couple of staples over it so that when you go out to cover it up on Friday, because if it's going to be that cold, I bet you the wind's going to be blowing. That cover gets blown over your beds. You put your staples in. You can walk back in the house in 10 minutes and know that everything's tucked in, makes it through the night. You know, now, if you've been really pushing it and have plants that are tender out there that you've been giving protection to already, now you probably want to step that protection up to another layer, you know. because we're gonna get some serious cold. That's just how it goes.
Well, Pat, just kind of a tangent off of the microclimate thing and stuff. I just want to mention this to you because it's so unusual and interesting here in our area. They have just finished a year-long study. They're conducted by the National Park Service and determined that we have a volcano in Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Mount LeConte is actually a mostly dormant but still alive volcano. And
wow.
Yeah, and they're saying
wow.
that we had this 2.1 magnitude earthquake, a minor tremor in February of last year, and it raised some red flags among geologists. So they started this study, and we're saying now that we've got an active volcano. It is now classified as an active volcano, and they don't see it as being extremely likely to erupt, but it is in a normal dormant state. And even if it did erupt, it might not be that huge. But we do have a volcano just up the road, Mount LeConte, a very, very slowly ticking little time bomb over there. But, you know, volcanoes form land and change the landscape. Eventually, it will erupt again. We don't know when, but one of these days. And it's just pretty interesting to have such a new thing just discovered there right up the road at Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Yeah, that whole story about volcanoes is fascinating and a little terrifying, you know. People that know about the super big one underneath Old Faithful and Yellowstone National Park know that our whole world could change tomorrow, and we have no way of predicting it. It could change in ways that we can't imagine. If that guy blows, boy, and it will blow. There's no doubt it will blow, just when in geologic time, you know. It's nothing to volcano to not blow for a few thousand years. On the other hand, we can't say that it won't blow tomorrow, you know.
Right, and we've had increasing tectonic plate activity in the Ring of Fire. We've had, you know, more prediction of different earthquakes and things out there in Oregon and California. And there have been some alerts that potentially power could be lost for months out there. I don't know what emergency services are planning for, but there's, you know, this idea that it could be imminent, and a lot of seismologists know that. And you know, that, of course, that affects our ability to grow food, access to sunlight, air quality, and the rest. So it may be more important since we have a big vegetable fertile field out there, the whole San Joaquin Valley and much of what grows out west, to maybe start to really think about how important our local food hubs are going to be in the face of anything like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And indeed, you know, as much as possible to build as many redundant systems in, because frankly, we could be affected too. If the one in Yellowstone were to go, I don't know that we would actually be affected by the blast, but it would set up the equivalent of a nuclear winter, you know. We might actually even be affected by the blast. It's that big, you know. Not massively, but there's been ones that have gone before that have basically deafened people for hundreds of miles, you know. They can be that powerful. You know, this, we don't know enough to go on about that much, but it is fascinating. I mean, the power of it all, the wonder of it all. And I mean, the one great lesson for us is to live life as fully and purposely as we can. And, you know, with as much intention as possible, build as much resilience into our systems as we can.
Yes, it's true. We'll have a great big chance to do that in community this coming weekend. Of course, our biggest event of the year happening, where we get to go out and meet, hopefully now this time, probably over about 20,000 people coming for the Mother Earth News Fair all weekend long. It should be quite exciting. I'm sure we'll see you there, Pat. Are you going to be doing some demonstrations or anything?
Yeah, I'll probably figure out something to do. I don't know if I'm going to make it on Saturday. I plan to be there for Sunday anyway.
All right. Well, we'll be doing it and meeting gobs of people and getting people signing up for that email and learning about Living Web Farms and saying hello and looking forward to seeing all the great people that come together for that event. Lots of great events coming up as well, including the whole workshop schedule going on for the year at Living Web Farms. Check that out at livingwebfarms.org, and you can register, get going, share the information. And, you know, that time of year to get out and meet people. We had the North Asheville Farmers Market opening up last weekend. Do you know about some more that are opening up in the area?
I think it's the 19th for the French Broad one. If the 19th is a Wednesday, it's the 19th. But it's opening up sometime around that Wednesday. The Wednesday closes to the 19th. And I imagine City Market would be any day now. I don't know the exact date. But yeah, this time of year, it's usually in mid-April through early May that they all just start coming online. and we're into another season of all the markets. Yeah.
All right. So that Wednesday should be the 20th of April then. And that's always fun to look there at the French Broad Food Co-op down on Belmore Avenue. And many others will be making a live stop, doing a show down at the Mills River Farmers Market here at some point very soon. We'll be talking to Joe Britton and helping to coordinate that. So great to support the farmers and reminding folks, as we did at the whole beginning of this show, to get out there and meet your farmers. And, of course, the farmers tour, the big farm tour with ASAP, has been moved back to June this year. So we've got June 25th and 26th for our farm tour for another chance to see more farms. Yeah.
Wonder if that was just to avoid the avian flu thing this year. I mean, it's not an issue in the summer because the birds aren't flying through, you know. And so that may be why, you know, it might be, I mean, flu just isn't an issue in the summer. I bet you they did that so that they couldn't be shut down.
Yes, last year it was very sad to hear about the canceled farm tour. We all were like, oh, you know, a big sigh there. So maybe that is why. I was wondering, and I know it had been in June before. So I bet you are correct, Pat, because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That way they don't have that. I mean, it's, of course, huge expense to them to put all that stuff up and then have to cancel it, you know. So it's perfectly reasonable. I mean, I think the reason they did it is for a lot of farms around here, June is still a getting going month, you know. By September, there's just so much more going on that they wanted people to see more crops that were at completion rather than crops that were just starting, you know. But it's far better to see crops starting than not be able to go on a farm tour. So,
yeah, that was pretty crazy last year, and I'm glad to see we haven't had any further problems there in the fall. But looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. Are we going to be doing anything with that this year at the farms?
I don't think we are. I don't think that they've contacted us, or we haven't contacted them. And frankly, we're flat out enough that I don't know that Marathon about doing it. You know?
Oh yeah, we're not unbusy by any stretch of the imagination, at all. Yeah. So plenty to do. Yeah.
I thought we cut our workshop schedule down this year, but it sure doesn't feel like it, you know?
Well, it's still a lot. And in the spring, you know, like I'm jumping out there on the weekends and going to all these places and loving meeting people, getting a little bit out of the desk in the office a little bit, which is necessary for both sanity and physical ability to function. So it's really great to do that. And so between the running around on the weekends and then jumping in the week, it's so much fun. But yeah, it's definitely a get out there and meet folks time. I've got a whole bunch more people to pass along that we did from the Home and Garden Green Living Show. A bunch of people coming here and wanting to start up their gardens, so they're learning about living web farms. It's great to see that. And, of course, I think we need to get a whole pile of schedules down over to the new Fifth Season store. They're going to be having their event on April 16th, so I've got those ready, and I forgot to bring them the other day, but want to get those available as well, because at Fifth Season, they have so many great organic products for gardening, and then people might need some help in learning and say, hey, check out this website and learn from livingwebfarms.org. So we talked to them about it, and we'll be bringing those by.
Doing a little presentation at that event on getting your seedlings going. So you get to see me there in the morning. I'll be back at Living Web Farms for the cheese workshop later in the day. But in the morning, I'll be out there talking about getting your seedlings going. So I'll see anybody that wants to check that out there. You know, I got two things I want to cover, though, and I got to kind of do them quick because I'm going to be meeting up with Andrew Brown and Bob Anderson to take a bunch of the cyan wood we got from our good friend Ed Updike and graft it onto our apple trees and preserve a bunch of old-timey apples that are having to be – Ed's having to sell his property, and we don't know who the next owners are going to be and if they're going to value those trees, so we're just going to rescue some cyan wood.
Well, that's great to hear that. That's fantastic. I hope Ed's doing okay. I know he's going through some transitions, but I'm so glad you guys are going to be able to take that cyan wood and maybe bring them alive again in a new tree.
And for 89, I think Ed's doing great, and I think he would say that too. You know, if I'm doing as well as Ed's doing at 89, I'd be real happy.
All right.
Anyway, the two things I want to say is the things to start right now. If you have protection, you could actually start squash, but you're going to need to protect it. You know, I'm talking summer squash. I wouldn't bother with winter yet. You know, if you're willing to use Walla Waters and other, you know, extraordinary means, you could be putting tomatoes out in early May, you know. So you could be starting those now. You could also be starting peppers probably next week if you're likewise going to be doing that kind of protection, you know. Of course, you can still start successions of all the salad greens and cooking greens. If you're going to be doing any of the perennial herbs, you might be dividing them now, all the Mediterranean herbs, the thymes, the savories, the marjorams, things like that. taking cuttings from things like rosemary that are just starting to grow and getting those propagated. All that can be done right now. You can be starting flowers. You know, I always start sunflowers about now. They are slightly frost resistant. That's good enough. You can get them out there as little seedlings. They'll take those last few frosts. You get that glorious display early on. Be providing nectar and pollen to your beneficials from the get-go, and then just do successions all summer long. If you haven't started your bachelor buttons and calendulas yet, get those going, probably direct in the ground by now, you know. And then you can start if you're into it. You don't not you can direct seed them, of course. You can start them later, but you could start things like zinnias and cosmos and stuff like that now too. You just would want to put them in bigger pots, not plant them out till after May 15th. But you know, if you want to grow them big, if you're looking for early flowers, and there's a lot of joy to early flowers, you can be getting those going now also. Of course, the cilantro, carrot family herbs, dill, cilantro, chervil, parsley, all those should be started regularly and put out in successions. Maybe only one or two successions for parsley because it's long lived, but the other ones, many successions through the summer. So those are things to be looking at starting right this minute. If you haven't got your peas in the ground yet, it's not too late, and we don't. But you want to get them in soon. I always recommend soaking them overnight. Don't over soak them because they'll split in half, but soak them overnight so you get that radicle to show up and start to separate. That means even if it gets in cold soil, it's going to pop pretty quick. And at this point, you need to do that if you want to get peas. The final thing I want to do is I want to bemoan the fact that we had to cancel Carlton Burke's presentation on animals and birds in the garden. And you know, I just have to go ahead and write something up. I want to reschedule that and try again. But I want people to think about why we scheduled that class. And that's because a lot of people are tuned in now to the fact that insects in the garden are a good thing. And a great diversity of insects in the garden are a good thing. But I don't know if enough other people get how important the various birds and mammals that interact with our garden are. They have, you know, dissected bats and found massive numbers of cucumber beetles in there, massive numbers of moths that leave their eggs on our brassicas and on our other crops, and their larvae hatch out and feed on our crops, you know. Really major control of insects is the bats, you know. All the birds, likewise. The birds play a huge role in helping us to keep balance with our insects, you know. We're still going to do one on snakes and reptiles in the garden, you know, but actually amphibians, they don't really qualify as reptiles. Toads, huge, you know. Toads are, you know, if you have problems with slugs and snails, you want to make the conditions prime for turtles and toads, you know. And that was why we scheduled that class. I'm going to try again. I'm going to write something up. I'm going to try and convince people that they want to learn what Carlton, who's incredibly knowledgeable about this kind of life, has to share. You know, one of the things that I was hoping to ask him about is what about making boxes for screech owls and kestrels, also known as sparrowhawks. These small raptors, a major proportion of their food is things like voles. Who's not bothered by voles? You know, we want to know about this stuff, and I'm sure that it's just people are busy and thought, oh, well, that one's not that pertinent. It is so pertinent. So I'm going to try again. Just a warning. We haven't let go of that workshop. That's one that I'm going to cling to until I get folks to pay attention to it.
Well, you know what, Pat? Sometimes during the week, people get so caught up in their schedule. But once we have something online, you know, we have this wonderful global audience. We've got more than 12,000 subscribers now. And every time we put a video up, they get a notice. And even if we do a nice shoot of that or do a good PowerPoint or whatever and just do that, get that information, and we put that out there, even if people aren't even in attendance, that makes it available to everyone. And, you know, we've got some great sweeping new laws. We've got Maryland banning neonicotinoids for consumer use. We've got, you know, things happening. We certainly want to encourage the natural biodiversity in a synergistic garden to be doing our pest control and not these horrible poisons. So, you know, it'd be great to get that. I think it's a super important aspect of a topic in the garden. And we can do that. Whether people are there or not, we can get that thing together and put it out there, and thousands of people will definitely get a hold of that and be enjoying it.
We will do it one way or another, but in honor of our presenter, I would like to have at least, like, you know, a handful of people.
Oh,
there
of course, of course.
You know? So we're going to try again. I'm not letting go of that one.
Yeah, but we end up with tons of people in any case, you know, and so I think it's really important. Wonderful to see. I was so happy to see a little bat flying over the garden the other day, and they definitely need our help. So, yeah, I would love to see that one rescheduled.
Okay, well, I'm going to run. I got to go graft some trees. So Thank you for your time. Stay warm, folks. That's my wise thought for the day is this is not a time of year to not pay attention to how cold that wind can feel. You know, I know a bunch of people on our farm have got late flus and they've been miserable. So my wise thought for the day is remember this kind of changeable weather can take you down. Make
I
sure
am
you
still
got a diversity of protection.
Yeah, I am still doing all these layers. I've still got the layers because you're hot 1 minute and freezing the next. So that's great tip.
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right, Pat. Well, have a great week and happy grafting. Good luck with
all right.
that.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That is Patrick Battle this week in the garden, giving us a great synopsis of what we can be doing now, starting things up, getting them out sometimes, but protecting them until later on, you know, mid to late May. We've been here a while. We know this April 15th date for frost is not probably going to be very realistic, but still the wonderful new starts of spring are coming up and blossoming. Get those peas in. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you soon right here on Earth Heart Network Radio.